Okay, good morning. So let me start. Any questions from yesterday's lecture? I went a bit fast at the end, so. Yes?
I don't really understand the significance of the background field.
Pardon?
I don't really understand the significance of the background field.
I'll take it as a definition.
Okay. Does it have some physical interpretation?
Well, it. I gave one physical interpretation, which is that when you look at the value of the background field at the minimum of the effective action, then it's the effective expectation value for the field, so that the field seen by the other particles. You can see that in that way. Well, it's a standard denomination. I think I should read again the lecture by Coleman, because I think it's Coleman who introduced this terminology. But when you do calculation, you can see that if you study perturbation theory for higher order, you know, process, for instance, particle moving in the field, they behave usually as particles seeing this effective field. So that's a background field in which the dressed particles, the excitation of the quantum fields propagates. So in that sense, it's an effective background field which is seen as a background for the other excitation. So maybe, I'm not sure it's a complete answer, but I think it comes from this. Okay, thank you. Okay, so today I'm going to continue the discussion of the effective action, and I'm going to. So remember, what I define in a very formal way what is the quantum effective action as a Legendre transform of the generating functional for connected correlation function, which corresponds to some kind of vacuum energy. And I stated that this it has a simple form at first order in H bar. So the quantum correction to the classical action takes a very simple form. So that's the first statement. And the second statement I made was that this effective action is the generating functional for the irreducible diagram of the theory. So I'm going to show this on the example of the 5-4 theory. So remember. So I started from a general theory where I have a field phi, which is a quantum field, but it's a scalar field. Level for simplicity. It has an action S of phi, which is a classical action, which is in our case of the forms d mu phi squared. You can write it like V of phi. That's this encompass the phi-4 theory. And we defined the partition function, the generating function for the correlation function of the functional integral. Is exponential minus 1 over h bar the classical action minus g dot phi, where g is a classical source term. Okay. And we define w of g as just h bar times log of z of g, and that's the generating functional for connected functions. Okay, and the effective, the quantum effective action, gamma of this background field is defined by the fact that this is a Legendre transform of this functional, the connected functional, with the relation between the background field and G given by the fact that phi is it's a functional derivative of WG with respect to G. So here I'm using shorthand notation, where I omit the fact that they depend on X. But this means you prefer that phi of x is delta w of g divided by the variation with respect to the variation of the source term at a point x in space-time. And similarly, g phi means integral d dx, g of x, phi of x. My notation. And again, I'm just using the Euclidean space-time, but this can be adapted easily by adding an I factor and using the action in real time while this is the Euclidean action. Okay? Okay. So, now I claimed that this effective action takes a very simple form for general value of the configuration of the background field. This is just the classical action for the value of the background field plus a quantum correction, which is a log of the determinant of an operator, which is a second derivative of the classical action. So this is what is called the Hessian operator, which is the second derivatives of S of phi with respect to variation of phi. Okay, so it's a Hessian whose this the x y kernel of this is just a functional derivative with respect to phi at x and delta phi of y of S of phi. So this is the notation for this. Okay. So, how do we show this? Yes?
And this is around the classical minimum?
No. This is a formula which is valid for arbitrary background field configurations.
Okay. But you're using that the first functional derivative of the action with respect to the field is equal to zero, right?
No, yeah, but here I'm considering a variation where the field is non-zero.
Yeah, okay.
So this formula is very general. That's why it's beautiful and useful. It's valid for arbitrary background field configuration.
But still, it's a minimum of the classical action, right?
No. It's valid for any arbitrary.
So where did the first derivative of the action went? The first derivative of S.
The first derivative of this?
Of S.
Of S?
Yeah.
Well, it's just the first derivative of S. It's something. It's a functional of S. It's another field. I'm going to write this explicitly in the derivation. But you take this action. You take a field configuration, which you denote this bar phi instead of V phi. So it's a functional of phi. And you take its you can take its first derivative. It's a function. It's a function of x, and I'm going to write this. If you take its second derivative, it's a kernel, so it's a function of x and y, so it's a kernel of an operator. Yeah? But then you take the derivative at some, you know, arbitrary point in the space of fields of field configuration. So you have a big space of background field configuration, And this formula is valid everywhere. I'm going to show this. Okay. So let's keep the proof of this. Well, the proof uses, since it's a result at one loop, so this is the first, you know, this is a quantum correction. Of course, then you have higher order quantum corrections. This is a formula. And there is a general formula that allows to express the next order, but I'm not going to discuss them at that point. This is a result which is valid for small h bar, so in a regime where the quantum fluctuations are small. So it uses the saddle point approximation. So let's start from the very definition of this. Okay? So you obtain the effective action by starting with a function of the source term and making a Legendre transform. And then making the change of variable going from the variable g to the variable phi, with phi defined by this relation. Okay? So let's first estimate this, z of g. So I want to estimate g of g for arbitrary g, so arbitrary source term, a varying function, but at first order in an h bar expansion. An expansion in h bar. And this is easy to do because you can use the saddle point approximation. Start from this expression. You see, if h bar is small, this exponential is maximal when s of phi minus g phi is minimal, because that's just the peak of the Gaussian. So you must look for of s of phi minus g phi, g being fixed. So let's denote it phi c. Well, it could be phi, what is, yeah, in my notes it's phi c, because some kind of critical point. And of course, phi c is a functional of g, because if you change g, the minimum of this function is going to change. So phi c is, of course, defined by the equation that s prime of phi c equal g, because s prime, this means that, in fact, that the functional derivative of phi with respect to variation of phi at a point x minus g of x times the functional derivative of g phi is phi of x is zero. So this is the equation that defines phi c, which is a function of g. Remember, that's, I will omit the fact that phi c is a function null of g to make the notation more compact, but that's the crucial point. So phi c is a function of g, and it's defined by this equation. It's a point value of the field where the first order derivative of the action, of the classical action, is equal to the source term. Okay. So that's the saddle point in this functional integral. But now, of course, we must estimate the integral around this saddle point. So in order to write and estimate the contribution of the integral around the saddle point. What we do is that we expand S of phi, the action, around the saddle point. So we write S of phi as S of phi C. So we write phi, a general phi, as phi C plus square root of h bar, some variation of phi, let's call it phi tilde. So this is the saddle point. And these are the, you know, fluctuations around the saddle point. So it's just a change of variable. And we can rewrite this as, we can rewrite the action as S of phi C. And if we expand in terms of phi tilde times square root of h bar the action, the first order term disappears, because of course it's square root of h bar, what I want to expand is S of phi minus g phi. This is S of phi c minus g times phi c. That's the contribution of the saddle point. Then you have the first order term, which is S prime, which is phi tilde times S prime of phi c minus g. This means the scalar product of the function phi tilde of x with the function S prime of phi c minus g of x, which is this function. But this is zero, since phi c is the saddle point. Phi c has been devised to kill this term. And then you have a second order term, which is the second derivative of that, of this. The second derivative of this respect to phi, this term is linear in phi, so it doesn't play any role. And what remains in the second derivative, contribution of the second derivative of the action, which is one half of, I'm going to write this as phi tilde times the operator, the Hessian at phi c, times phi tilde. And then you have term of order h bar 3 half that I'm going to neglect. So this is simply the quadratic term in the expansion of this around phi c. And again, this is a short hand notation for integral dx1, integral dx2, phi tilde of x1, the kernel phi c of x1 of the Hessian times phi tilde of x2, because this is a quadratic form. Okay, so this is a shorthand notation for this. Okay, and now when we expand z of g, we get a constant term plus a quadratic term in phi tilde. And of course, since phi is linear, we can write that z of g is just so integral over d phi tilde. Remember, the measure on the phi is just a product of the value of the field at the different point. Yes?
Sorry, I missed this, but why are we putting a square root of h bar?
Oh, it's just because it's just a choice of normalization here, but we are going to see immediately that the order of magnitude of phi tilde in the functional integral is over the one with this notation. So the fluctuation around phi c are of order square root of h bar. And that's going to be the idea behind the saddle point approximation. So just take this as a choice of normalization. And I explain in 1 minute why this is a clever choice. Because you see, I make the change variable here. So I change phi, my integration over phi into an integration over phi tilde. That's possible because phi is just a dummy variable in the functional integral. But then the exponential of the action is what? It's exponential of minus 1 over h bar times s of phi c minus g phi. phi c. Okay, this is a constant that can come out of the integral. And then you get exponential of minus, so I get minus 1 over h bar times h bar divided by 2, so I get minus 1/2. So h bar has disappeared with this choice of normalization, times the quadratic form phi tilde times the Hessian of the classical action only at phi c times phi tilde. And if I expand the exponential of this order term, this term is over the h-bar 3/2, so I get 1 plus, well, I get a 1 over h-bar divided by plus term of order h-bar 1/2 that I can neglect. And I can neglect them because this is a constant. It doesn't depend on phi tilde. And this is a Gauss, so this integral plus this exponential, this is a Gaussian integral. So we know how to compute this Gaussian integral. And you see that in a Gaussian integral, phi tilde is over the 1. You see? Because this is the inverse of the variance of phi tilde, square root of phi tilde. Because the fluctuation of phi tilde are of order 1 over square root of the second derivative, which is of order 1, let's say. Because this is something of order 1. There is no h bar here. It's just a classical term. Do you understand? So that's the idea behind all saddle point approximation. So if you meet saddle point approximations, they are everywhere in physics and in mathematics. And for instance, in statistical physics, instead of h-bar, this is usually the temperature. And the saddle point approximation is a very good approximation for doing low temperature expansion. And in classical physics, the saddle point approximation becomes the WKB approximation, or the stationary narrow phase approximation. Okay. So it appears in many, it appears in classical physics, in propagation of waves, it appears in optics, it appears in quantum field theory, it appears in math. So there is a whole theory in complex. When you have complex integral, you have something called the complex WKB approximation. So, okay. So this is not at all specific to the quantum field theory calculation I'm doing here. Okay. But now, this is a Gaussian integral, of course. We know that the exponential of a Gaussian integral is just related to the determinant of the quadratic form. So this is, I get this out of the exponential, so I get exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi c minus g times phi c, and I get the determinant, the functional determinant of this second derivative of the classical action for a value of the classical field, which is given by phi c, to the power minus 1/2. So this is a classic a functional determinant. And the factor 1/2 here appears because phi is a scalar real field. phi is scalar real field. If it was a complex field, then there will be a factor of minus one. If it was a field with a, you know, component, it would be different. That's because phi is real scalar. Okay, so this is Z of G. And then you get a higher order term that I neglect. Okay, so this is the basic result. Okay. And of course, now, out of this, we take the log, and we obtain the functional W of G. We get that W of G is just minus this, so it's G times phi C minus the classical action evaluated at the field configuration phi C. And then I get minus, there is a h bar, because remember W of G is h bar times log of Z, so I get this is plus, so it's minus h bar divided by 2, and we have the log of the determinant. The log of the functional determinant of the Hessian operator, the second derivative of the classical action evaluated at phi C. And those terms become term of order h bar 3 halves that we neglect, because h bar is assumed to be a small parameter. Okay? So we get an explicit expression, but remember, phi c is a function of g. Phi c defined by the equation S prime of phi c equal g. This is the equation that defines phi c. Okay. So now, we perform the Legendre transform. So first we have to compute what is phi, the background field, in terms of g. Yes?
Before you move on, can I just ask, when you're doing the Gaussian integral, inside the measure, there's a bunch of other factors.
Yes.
Do they all magically cancel?
No, they are not important. Because if you can do the calculation on the lattice, of course. This calculation makes sense if you have regularized your theory on the lattice. And on the lattice, remember, the measure is written on the... It's a lecture note, but I discussed that a bit. On a lattice with a mesh epsilon, if I'm not mistaken, this is a product over the sides, x of the lattice, d phi, and then there is a factor 2 pi h bar epsilon. I don't remember if it's 2 minus d or d minus 2. I think it's d minus 2 to the power minus 1 half. And so you see that this is a measure which is, that's phi of x, phi at the point x. So you see that if you can change phi x into phi x plus square root of h bar phi tilde of x, the measure changes just by a factor of h bar. Basically, this factor of h bar is going to disappear because phi tilde is a dimensionless number. So this is, you are right to ask the question, but this works because the measure is linear in phi. Okay, so now we have to, so this is the first step. This was the first step to perform an integral around the saddle point. So now, second step, compute the Legendre transform. So compute first phi. Compute phi as a function of g. What I'm going to show, the result is that phi as a function of g is equal to phi c as a function of g plus a term of order h bar. This is non-trivial. So remember, phi c is a function of g, and the background field phi, var phi, is equal to phi c up to quantum correction. So that's what I'm going to show. And well, that's quite easy to show, because remember, phi is defined as the variation of W when I vary G at a shortened on notation for phi of x equals the functional derivative of W of G when I vary G at the point x. Okay. So, but now remember, in this expression, W depends on G in two ways. First, it depends explicitly on G. Second, it depends on the it depends on G because phi c depends on G. Phi c on the source term. So the total variation of W respect to G is equal to the derivative with respect to G of W of G, phi c being fixed. So this is phi c plus the term that comes from the functional derivative of phi c with respect to G. So this is plus something which is something that I'm going to be the explicit derivative of phi c with respect to variation of g times a term which is just the functional derivative of w with respect to phi c. And the functional derivative of w of g with respect to phi c in this expression, what is this? This is g minus the functional derivative of the action with respect to phi c, so this is s prime of phi c, plus the functional derivative of this term when I vary phi c, and that's a non-trivial term. But this term is of order h bar. So let me write it. H bar, well, that's a minus H bar divided by 2 times something which is a functional derivative with respect to phi c of log determinant of this action of the Hessian with respect to phi c. Of course, plus, of course, term of H bar 3/2 that I neglect. Okay, so here I have a term of order h bar, which is complicated. But it's a term of order h bar. So the term which are not of order h bar are this term, which is potentially complicated, times this term. But this term equals 0 from the very definition of phi c, remember. Phi c is defined by the solution of this equation. By the definition of phi c as a function of g. So I can forget it. I don't need to know what this term is. And I get the result. Phi as a function, the background field as a function of g is equal to phi c, which is a function of g, the saddle point, plus correction of order h bar. You see? It comes just, we choose to expand around the saddle point, and that makes the job. Okay. So that's the second step. And now we are almost done, because we can just oh, it is, yes. So step three, plug this. In the definition of the effective action, plug this, compute gamma of the background field. Okay, so what is gamma alpha? This is the source term times the background field minus the generating function of connected diagram, which is a function of phi, but we wrote it here. So this is, that's the definition. So this is G times the background field minus the saddle point, which is a function of G. So this is a function of G. This is a function of G. And then we get plus the action evaluated at the saddle point, which is a function of G, plus h bar over 2, the log of the determinant of the Hessian operator evaluated at the saddle point, plus higher order terms. Okay? But now we have shown that the background field is equal to the saddle point plus some correction. So let's use this. And let's use this by writing that instead, phi c, the saddle point, is phi minus the correction. So it's minus h bar, something that I'm going to call delta. That's the correction. Okay? So phi c is a function of g. The background field is a function of g. As a function of g, that depends on h bar. But then there is a correction which is over the h bar anyway. While this is over the 1 plus h bar, and this is over the 1 plus h bar when expressed as a function of g. Okay. Well, if we do that, let's now let's expand everything here around phi, the background field, instead of phi c, the classical. Since the difference between the saddle point and the background field is small, we can expand again. Okay. So, of course, this is a function of g, but I'm expressing. And so we get that gamma, the effective action, is g times minus h bar delta plus Let me just check. Yes, plus the action at phi c, at bar phi, no, let me, I'm sorry, I'm a bit confused. So let's rewrite this term. Okay, I'm just to be a bit careful, because otherwise it's easy to make mistakes. I'm going to expand this as a function of s of phi. So I can rewrite s of phi c as the action. So the action at the saddle point. This is the action evaluated at the background field. Plus, of course, phi c minus the background field times. Oh no! Let's do that. Let's do the opposite. Let's try to replace s of phi c by s of phi. S of phi c is s of the background field is s of phi c plus, the secondary, the variation, so it's the background file minus phi c times s prime of phi c plus higher order terms. But we know that this is of order h bar. This is over the 1, this is over the 1, this is over the h bar, and then we get higher order term over the h bar squared. And this is true because phi minus phi c is over the h bar. You see? So we can rewrite this as g times background field minus the saddle point, plus a plus or minus. Did I make a mistake? No. No, that's okay. No, yeah, no. I'm writing this as this minus this. So I can rewrite this as this object. As g times background field minus the saddle point minus s prime of phi c times background field minus phi c. So I can write this as g minus s prime evaluated at the saddle point times background field minus phi c plus the action now evaluated at the background field, plus term over order h bar squared. So here you have no term over order h bar. This is potentially over order h bar because this is over order h bar. But again, this is equal to zero because of the definition of phi c. So that's the second time that we use this. Okay? So this first term is just the classical action evaluated at the background field plus term over the h bar squared. You see? So we can replace this by the classical action evaluated at the background field configuration, which is a function of GE, but okay. Now, this second term, This second term is a function of phi c, the saddle point. But here, we can replace phi c by the background field, because the difference is over the h bar. So the difference between these terms is phi c, and this term, when you replace by the background field, the difference will be over the h bar, but this is multiplied by h bar. So the difference between these terms evaluated at phi c and these terms evaluated at the background field is also over the h bar squared. So finally, we get that that's the classical action plus h bar divided by 2 times the log of the determinant of the Hessian operator evaluated at the background field, plus higher order terms. Okay? And that's the effective action. Okay. And of course, in this calculation, everything has to be thought as a function of G, of the source term, except that in the final expression, the dependence on G, on the source term, is entirely contained in the background field. So the background field is a complicated function of G, but the final expression is simply a function of the background field. So we can make, trivially, the change of variable. So at that stage, it's only a function of the background field. So we can make the change of variable from G to phi is easy. In this expression, the change of variable from the source to the background field is trivial. It's explicit. It's calculation. Yes?
So the higher order terms, is the first one is still the h bar to the 3 over 2 that we've been carrying around.
Yes. Yeah. So all the order terms, so all what we have, you know, all what we neglected is here. They can be computed too by, you know, a bit more of work. But okay. Yes.
And when you're using the saddle point approximation, you are doing it around a classical, a solution of the classical equation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But a classical equation of motion in presence of a source term. So you see this derivation, it's a bit sketchy because I have not written any dependence in the position, but you can, it's a good exercise to repeat this argument, but taking care of all the position and to be sure what we are doing. And so that's the result I stated yesterday. And you see that the proof is very general. I've not used anywhere, the explicit form of the action. I've just used the fact that the action is a functional of a scalar real field. So the proof is general. It can be expanded. In phi being a complex field. So we deal with charged particle or a vector field. Phi equal phi a equal 1 to some component, so field carrying, you know, non-abelian charges, etc. And in fact, it can be expanded also to vector field A mu A. So Maxwell field or Young Mill fields, it can be expanded, but then one has to be careful with gauge invariance. And it can be expanded to fermions, but then one has to take care of the Gaussian integral for fermions. I'm going to go back. But beware to the Fermi statistics. I'm Dirac. Ticks for fermions. In fact, the Fermi Dirac will mean that this factor 1/2 will be transformed into a -1. Because this corresponds to fermionic loops, and fermionic loops for fermions have a minus sign. Okay, but and of course, even you know, tensor fields like the gravitational fields, one can use this formula because they are scalars, they are bosons. Okay, so now let's see what this formula means for phi 4. So I use just the first one. So okay, so this was the third. So this was the first, this was the second, this was the third blackboard. This was the first blackboard, this was the second blackboard. Let me, this is my fourth blackboard. So now let's see what this means. Application. The phi 4 theory. So I wrote the action for the phi. So the phi 4 theory is just an action where V of phi contains a quadratic term, which is, contains the mass of the quanta of the field, plus a quadratic term, phi 4, with a Koplik constant. So the effective action is just a classical action. It's just a classical action that you can write as this. I will write it of d phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared plus g divided by factorial 4. Phi to the 4. Okay, and then I get my quantum correction, which are the trace of the logarithm of this Hessian. And we discussed already what is this Hessian. We get the log of the determinant, and the log of the determinant, I'm going to write it as a trace of an operator, which is a logarithm of the operator, which is the Hessian. It's just an extension of the fact that for matrices, for finite dimensional matrices, the trace of a log of a matrix is a log of the determinant of the matrix. That's simply because if you have a matrix which is corresponding to an Hermitian, this is, for an action, this is a symmetric matrix. It's an Hessian matrix. So it can be diagonalized. The determinant is a product of the eigenvalues. The log is the sum of the log of the eigenvalues. So it's a trace, a sum of eigenvalues. It's a trace of a matrix whose eigenvalues are the log of the eigenvalues. So it's a log of the operator. So this is formally the log of the Hessian. And what is the second derivative of this? Well, you apply the rule of functional calculus. The functional derivative, the second order functional derivative of d phi squared is the kernel of an operator, which is just the Laplace operator. So it's minus the Laplacian. Operator. So it's a second order differential operator. The second derivative of phi squared is just the identity operator. So it's m squared plus m squared. And the second derivative of phi 4 is the operator multiplication by phi squared. So it's not multiplication by one, it's a multiplication by a function that depends on phi. And the second order derivative, so there is a factor 4 times 3, so there's a 6 divided by 2, so I get a 1 over 2. So it's, I get a plus g divided by 2 phi squared. Okay, so this is the explicit form of the effective action at one loop. So this is quantum corrections. And then you get a higher order term that I'm going not to consider here. So this is the effective action for the for phi 4. So now, remember, I claim that this is generating function for the irreducible diagrams of the theory, Feynman diagrams of the theory. Okay? So let's show this. Well, this we can rewrite it by you know, if we assume that you are on a torus and you take periodic boundary condition, you can rewrite this as phi times minus nabla phi. So you can write that, for instance. So well, first let's expand in powers of phi. So now phi is arbitrary, and now I assume that phi is small. I expand in powers of the background field. So I get a term of order 2. So the term of order 2, the classical term is just, we can rewrite this as integral d dx, well, 1 half of phi of x minus delta plus m squared phi of x, and that's Laplace operator with respect to the variable phi applied to the right, plus g over factorial 4 phi of x to the power 4. So if you go from this to Fourier transform, it becomes p squared plus m squared. This becomes just a contact term. So you see that the Fourier transform of this can be written as this diagram, which is a doubly truncated propagator, whose amplitude in momentum space is p squared plus m squared. But here, you associate to this a phi and a phi, and you have a factor 1/2 because they are symmetric. And here, you get phi of x 4, so you get just the vertex with truncated legs here, with 4 phi, which are located at the same point. You have a factor g, and you have a factor 1 over factorial, because here you cannot distinguish between the legs. They are not labeled. So this is a classical term. The classical term here, when you expand it in powers of phi, reproduces just the doubly truncated propagator and the truncated vertex. So the basic element to build the perturbation theory. Okay, so that's not surprising. That's just Feynman rules. the building blocks. What we have to know is consider the quantum correction, quantum term. Given by this. Okay. We can expand it in phi or in g, because this is small. So let's consider this operator. This operator, minus lambda plus m squared plus g over 2 phi squared, can be rewritten as minus lambda plus m squared, the original operator, the H for the free theory, times 1 plus g over 2 times the inverse of this operator times phi squared. So this is the operator multiplication by phi squared. And this is the operator whose kernel is the inverse of this operator. So it's a diagonal operator, if you want, and that's a non-diagonal operator. I'm going to write this explicitly. And then I can rewrite the trace of the log is the log of the determinant. What is the determinant of this operator? It's the determinant of this operator slash this operator. So if we trust the rule of calculation, the determinant of a product of two matrices is the product of the determinant of the two matrices. So the determinant of this is the determinant of this times the determinant of this. So this term here, let me just write this term. Let's forget about the h bar divided by 2. This term can be written as trace log of the Hessian for the free theory plus trace log of the identity operators plus g over 2 times the operator, the inverse of the Hessian times the operator multiplication by phi squared. This is still a bit abstract, but I'm going to detail. Okay, so now let's consider this term. So this term is something which is, comes from the free theory. Okay, what is this term? Well, now we can compute this term by a perturbative expansion. This contains both powers of phi and powers of the complete constant. So we can expand the log. Expand the log. The log of 1 plus something small, you know the expansion. So this term, this new term here, is equal to, I should have used the other black. This is, of course, sum from k equal 1 to infinity of minus 1 to the power k, divided by k, times the trace, well, there is a factor g over 2. G over 2 to the power k times the trace of this operator to the power k. So minus delta plus m squared minus 1 times phi squared. This times this operator. And I take the trace of this. K times. Yes?
What's like, because now we're expanding on G.
And we're expanding in either in G or in phi. That's the same, sure. Yes.
But we drop terms of h squared, for example.
Yes, no.
How do we know that we're not keeping stuff that we dropped before, now that we span?
No, we are not. This term is definite, and we expand it in powers of g and phi squared. So, okay? And you are going to see that no h bar squared term are generated.
No, sure.
They cannot be generated.
Like, how do we know that terms, say, of order gh are still more important than terms of order h bar squared?
That's a good question. We assume in this expression that h bar is over the 1, that phi, the background field, is over the 1, and g is over the 1. And it's going, you can consider that it's small, but it's small but over the 1. So we first take the limit h bar goes to 0, and then the limit phi or g goes to 0. So you are right, that's a good question. As I explained before in previous lecture, it's important to be sure that when you make expansion, whether you have or not, you have integrated limits, and you must keep in mind, yes. So you are right. What we are doing here is that first we consider that h bar is small, then g phi squared is small, but this first, this later. And there are cases where you have compute things when you cannot make this approximation. Yes?
Are you sure about the sign of the expansion?
No, I am sure it's wrong because it's k plus 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It's trace of log of 1 plus 6 is minus 6 plus 6 squared divided by 2 minus 6 cubed. Yeah. That's the standard expansion of the log. Okay, so now of course, this has been written in an abstract way, but let's write it more explicitly. Remember, this is an operator which has a kernel, and that's operator multiplication phi squared. So what does this mean? This means that again, less, well, this second square here. Okay, this second squared. What does this specific term here? Rather, let's consider what is this specific term here. This violet term, the term of order k. The term of order k so this is a product of operator acting on functions in space. So the trace is just the sum of the diagonal elements. So the trace of this minus delta plus m squared times phi squared to the power k, the trace is just integral over dx, let's call it x1, of the kernel of minus delta plus m squared phi squared to the power k, x1, x1. That's the rule of calculation. So this operator to the power k has a kernel. Now, what is the kernel of this operator? What is the kernel of minus delta plus m squared times phi squared? Let's call it xy. So this operator is you multiply by phi squared, and then you make a convolution with the inverse of this subject.
I was just going to ask if
okay.
The inverse, right?
So the kernel of this is just minus delta plus m squared. The kernel, oh, it's minus 1. Yeah, sorry, that's what you,
yeah.
I'm sorry, you are very good at spotting my xy times phi squared of y. This is a kernel of this object. you take, and this is just the propagator of the free field. So it's just the propagator multiplied by the value by phi squared, which is a function to the left, or to the right, I'm sorry. Okay. Now, what is the kernel of this object? It's just the convolution of this kernel. So, and you end up by taking the same. So this is just, so the kernel of this to the power k is a k convolutions of the kernel of this operator. So this means that this is just minus delta plus m squared minus 1 x2, so I rewrite it x2, phi squared of x2 minus delta plus m squared x2 x3, phi squared of x3. I go on until I get to the last of the k operators, so I get minus delta plus m squared to the power xk, xk plus 1, phi squared of xk plus 1, but I am integrating over a diagonal element, so xk plus 1 is x1. And convolution means that I am making a big integral over dx1 up to dxk. So this is a kernel of this. This is the trace of this operator is just given by this big integral. Over propagators and products of the square of the background field. So this corresponds. This is an integral of products of propagator. So it can be represented as a Feynman diagram. It's a Feynman amplitude. It's the amplitude of a Feynman diagram. This is just the amplitudes in a real space of the following diagram. I have a propagator that goes from x1 to x2. I have a propagator that goes from x2 to x3. I have a propagator that goes from x3 to x4, etc. And at the end, I have a propagator that goes from xk to x1. So I have a loop with k propagators. And at each vertex, I multiply by the value of the background field at the position point. So here, I can represent this by, let me show this little way. Here, I associate a field. Here, I associate a field, phi, 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 phi. But here, I associate a truncated propagator. Phi is the propagator minus delta plus m squared minus 1. So this is a usual propagator. And this line here between a vertex and a phi is delta, the operator delta between the two points. So it's a truncated propagator, because phi squared, see here you have phi of x2 times phi of x2, and not x2 times some propagator times phi at the other end of the propagator. So this is a truncated propagator. Okay. So this is just an irreducible diagram. So this is just the irreducible diagram of phi four theory with 2k external truncated legs to which I attach the phi, and what's important, just one internal loop has no internal propagator connecting two vertices. So it has one internal loop. Okay, so now this is the expression for one term. Then of course you have a factor of G associated to each diagram. You have a combinatorial factor which is going to be minus 1 k plus 1, 1 over factorial k, 1 over 2 to the power k, and there is now an h bar to the power 1 half. So the one loop term finally, so finally, final result, the h bar term is equal to h bar sum from k equal 1 to infinity. You get a factor minus 1 minus g to the power k, 1 half times 2 to the power k, 1 over 2 to the power k, a factorial k, times the this Feynman diagram with one loop with truncated diagram here and with phi, etc. Phi, and you have k vertices. Irreducible diagram. Okay? So now, if you take the functional derivative with respect to phi n times, you see, if you want now to compute what is the, where could I write this a bit without being too much, if you want to write this. If you want to write what is the functional derivative with respect to phi of x1 up to delta, well, let's call it z because these are external parameters, delta phi of z, 2k of the one loop term, which is h bar over 2 trace of the log of the Hessian of phi, and evaluate it at phi equals 0, the background field equals 0, then what we get is, well, some factorial k will disappear, you are going to get, well, you still are going to get this minus 1, this h bar, minus 1, minus g to the power k, and you are going to get the sum over all Feynman diagram like that, with k external legs, with 2k external legs, with truncated propagator. And here you have z, 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 and you have just a combination, which is a sum over all inequivalent labelings of the external legs. That's it. So for instance, the term of order k equal 1 is going to be this diagram with 1, 2. The term of order k equal 2 is going to be this diagram with 1, 2, 3, 4, plus an equivalent labeling, which is 1, 3, 2, 4, plus this, which is 1, 4, 2, 3. And with a symmetry factor, which in all case is going to be 1 half. So you get 1 half here. You get time 1 half. And that's basically because you can revert the orientation of the parts. And for k equal 3, you are going to get this triangle diagram. Again, with a factor of 1 half, and you are going to have the, I don't know how many there are, maybe 15 inequivalent labeling of the external pairs, which doesn't give the same diagram. Yes?
So are diagrams with 2 internal loops of order h bar squared?
Yes. The diagram of order h bar are going to be the diagram with 2 loops. Yeah. So I hope I have convinced you by this bit explicit calculation, but it has to be done carefully, that the classical terms give you the, you know, the diagram with no loop, so basically just the inverse of the propagator and the interaction vertex. The term of order h bar give you all the one loop diagram. So h bar 0, this is classical. Classical, you get just the propagator and the vertex, the interaction vertex. H bar 1, you get the diagram with 1 internal loop. Okay. And it turns out that if you repeat the argument, and if you go to further orders, it's a bit more lengthy to compute, but once you get the idea, you have a theorem. Here I write it as a claim because I'm not going to prove it. I think there is a derivation in my lecture notes because you can, it's not that complicated. The claim is that the term order h bar to the power, let's call it b, in gamma of phi gives you, by bijection, the contribution of all irreducible diagrams, contribution of diagrams with B internal loops. So for instance, h bar equal 2 will give you the diagram of the form, and I think I've written, I wrote them a bit in my notes. Basically, you have diagrams like that. Diagram like that. And in the 5-4 theory, you just have to feel free to add, you know, any phi and any pairs of phi everywhere. And here. Phi, phi, etc. Phi, 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 external legs. You can check that for phi 4. All the reducible diagrams are either of this form or of this form. So in fact, there are only two different, you know, basic irreducible diagrams. At one loop, there is only one irreducible diagram, which is this one. At two loop, there's only two. At three loop, it's a bit more complicated, but you can play the game. Okay. So, well, almost done. So I won't start to discuss renormalization. So maybe I'll just, I can just add something about this, the fact that this semi-classical expansion is an expansion, which is an expansion in porous of h bar. Why is it equivalent to an expansion? It's called the loop expansion, which is a topological expansion. When you consider all the Feynman diagrams of the series that generate this perturbation theory of the series, why is there an expansion in terms of the topology of the diagram? Okay. Well, it comes from a simple formula, one of the most, you know, basic formula of topology, which I think is written here, which is in fact in its original form is due to Euler, the famous Swiss mathematician, and then, you know, has been expanded by a lot of mathematicians, for instance, including Poincaré. And if you think about phi to the 4, you know, consider a general diagram like, okay, let's consider a diagram like that. This is a Feynman diagram of the 5-4 theory. And if you count 12, it's a three loop diagram. So, what is a, what, and it's an irreducible diagram if you cut those loops. Well, this is a diagram of order g to the 4. Because in general, a diagram is of order g to the v, where v is the number of internal vertices. Okay. Now, if you think about what is this power of h bar? It's a power of h bar with some power. What is this power? Well, there is a 1 over h bar per vertex, because in the perturbative expansion, you have the g over h bar. So you have an h bar to the power minus v. Now remember, the two-point function is h bar times the propagator. So you have a plus L, where L is the number of internal lines. Propagator. Remember, the external lines are truncated. So they count for one, okay? And then you get a factor plus one, because when you go from z to w, you multiply the log of z by h bar. So you have an h bar, because basically this one is a number of connected components. Of the diagram, and for this diagram, or for any reducible diagram, or any connected diagram, has just one connected component. Okay, so the power of h bar is given by this number, this combination of the number of vertices of a diagram, the number of internal lines of the diagram, plus one for a connected diagram. Okay, and in fact, this formula doesn't depend on the fact that this diagram is a phi 4 diagram. No. If we have a connected graph of any shape, for instance, here is the one I draw in my picture, which is this one. It's a diagram which can be drawn on a map. This diagram cannot be drawn on a map, but that's a diagram that plays a role. This is a diagram where V is 4. L is 7. And the number of connected components is 1. Let's call it C. C is the number of connected components. V is for vertex, L is for line. Okay? Then, if you think about that diagram and try to draw how many independent, you know, for instance, how many independent current can flow, electric current can flow. That's a problem that has been considered by Kirchhoff and, you know, physicists and mathematicians in the 19th century, you see that you can you have 4 independent currents that can flow, if you have conservation of the current at the vertices, of course. So this number, the number of independent currents, if you want. Well, there is a theorem which states that this is precisely, I call it B. This is just this number. It's L minus V plus C, the number of connected component. Okay. And, well, that's a physicist picture, but in mathematics, this is called the first Betti number of this graph. So it's a concept that is important in topology and in algebraic topology. It's the first of topological invariant of object like graphs, simplices, and more complicated object or manifolds. Okay, so this is a topological invariant. Okay, and you see that the power of h bar is precisely this number of loops, or Betti number. And this formula is general. This is not a diagram of phi 4 theory. Okay. So, this theorem, this formula, which is one of the basic formula of topology, ensures that the semi-classical expansion in powers of h bar can be correspond to an expansion in the topology of the diagrams. And that's very general, fully general. That's true for phi 4, that's true for other theories that we are going to consider maybe, that's true for gauge theories, that's true for topology, the perturbative expansion in general relativity, that's true everywhere. Religion. Okay. And finally, well, one last riddle. Think about this diagram as a diagram where the vertices here, you have four vertices, are four islands. Think of the lines as being bridges between the islands. And find what is the famous problem, which was solved by Euler. So in the end of the 18th century, somewhere in Eastern Europe, which gave rise to the birth of the topology. Okay. Thank you.